This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Caroline Crandall, Chief Deception Officer of Attivo Networks.
Hello and good morning. As you said, I'm Caroline Crandall. I have a fascinating job here as Chief Deception Officer, which is really derived from Attivo Networks being a deception technology company. And I spend a lot of time educating the market on why prevention alone is not sufficient and why you need mechanisms for detection. Deception creates a very effective and efficient way for being able to deceive attackers into engaging and detecting them early so that they really can't create and complete an attack of any magnitude. Attivo Networks is a company that has been shipping products since about 2014. It has been steadily taking the market quietly by storm. A lot of people don't like to reveal that they're using deception technology, but what surprises a lot of people is that over half of our business is mid-market companies, but at the same time, we also have over half of the Fortune 10. So the point behind that is it gives a very effective way for detecting threats that are inside the network and have bypassed security controls.
It's interesting when we talk about deception because we think about attackers deceiving us. We think about phishing attacks where they're trying to fool staff or social engineering attacks. When we think about defense, we've had canary systems, but you're a long way removed from those canary type systems that we talk about, aren't you?
Absolutely. Everybody immediately pins to this is a trap or a decoy that you set up inside the network. And decoy is absolutely critical to deception technology. However, it goes so much further than that today. So if you think about every way that an attacker is going to attack, so they're going to compromise that first system and they're going to look to move laterally. They want to get off of that system and they're going to do so in a matter of a few hours on average. The other technologies really wait to react to an attack that's underway, but deception is really interesting because even some of the acts of observation that an attacker will do can trigger a deception alert. So we can put out things that, whether they're scanning, stealing credentials, doing a man-in-the-middle attack, whether they're looking for ports and services to exploit, there's a lot of really interesting things that deception can do that go beyond just that fundamental set of decoy in the network. The other thing that, even in decoy technology, that makes it dramatically different than before is before it's like, hey, look, we'd put it outside the network, we'd see for research who was attacking us, and it was interesting, but not terribly authentic or believable. With today's deception technology, it is mirror matching the production. So whatever operating systems, applications, services you're running, and it's in a high interaction environment. So really an attacker can't tell until they try some form of engagement, whether they scan or ping or do other things. It's just really a cool technology that if you can create an environment where an attacker can't tell what's real from fake or can no longer trust their tools, you all of a sudden start to tip the favor back to the defender because they always have to be the ones that have to be accurate all the time, where an attacker can come in, make a mistake, come out, make a mistake, come out, come back in, and now they can't. Now their presence is revealed and the defender really gets an opportunity to say, okay, now I know what they were trying to do, so I'm going to close that hole. And I'm also going to fortify my defenses with the knowledge that I've gained from being able to study them in a deceptive environment.
What's interesting about that to me straight off the bat is we started to get people to understand what reconnaissance really is. But the problem for a lot of defenders is they equate an absence of reconnaissance to an absence of an attack, rather than an absence of reconnaissance is that precursor to we've gathered the information and now we know where we're going. You talked there about even being able to find the attacker when they're doing that reconnaissance by what they're looking at, what they're doing. How effective and how much does that change the defender's position?
Most people are familiar with the MITRE attack framework, and there's about 12 steps that they introduce inside of that. And if you can look at deception being able to affect about 11 out of 12 of those steps, the most important one is step one in the attack. If we can stop them at the first step, then the defender's job is much more powerful because instead of chasing all of these things and cleaning it up, you're stopping it early in the attack. And then if there is anything critical going on, you can actually put your resources towards those critical incidents instead of just chasing whatever ghost happens to be going by. The interesting thing about deception, going back to, again, how an attacker attacks, if we think about, yes, reconnaissance is part of the work they do, but not always. If I'm an attacker and I have legitimate credentials moving through, you're not going to notice, and maybe you try to do some form of behavioral analysis, but it takes time to get good, and you get a lot of false positive, and so a lot of the alerts get removed. However, if I put an environment where I put deceptive credentials in that look like authentic ones, and then the attacker lifts those and tries to use those in any way, they're going to get breadcrumbed back into a deception environment. And that is the highest fidelity alert that you can get, because there is absolutely no production value for deceptive credentials. And so you immediately can gather information of what system was compromised, what tools, techniques that they're using to be able to move their attack forward and shut things down. There are even ways that you can use deceptive systems if they're using real credentials. You put up a fake deception server inside the environment that may be a juicy target for them. And again, the minute that you even try to use real credentials on a decoy system, again, you're going to realize something is happening. A lot of these are the deception technologies that have been out for the last couple of years that have really been slowing down the attacker and revealing their presence early. Some of the new innovative stuff that's coming out right now is some of the things around Active Directory defense. And if you think about it, keys to the kingdom. I get into the Active Directory, I get the lay of the land of everything. And so now deception is being used in a way that it'll intercept Active Directory queries. And this is the thing that makes it so fun, is now as an attacker, I'm trying to query Active Directory. And then as a company that produces a deception technology, Attivo has the technology to be able to, one, hide those real production assets and then feedback fake information. And so now the attacker thinks that they're continuing to escalate their attack, all the while they're being placed into a deception environment. And we know that it works because we've had pen testers take runs at it and have been in there for days without even realizing, excited. We're progressing. Look at, I just compromised this domain controller and here I go. And all the while it's like, nope, we're logging every minute and tracking everything. And so the cool piece of that is back to being very early in the attack. If we can take any active observation and derail that effort, think about how effective that is for stopping an attack before it even gets started. That's what makes me so excited, not only about where the technology has been, but some of the things that it's going into these days.
One of our challenges when we're looking post an attack is trying to understand what the attackers were after, what the vectors were that they came in from, but more importantly, what it was they were looking for to move around the network. In your response to the first question, you talked about being able to track how they moved. It's kind of like the medical analogy. If you can find patient zero, you can find how a disease spreads. How are your customers adapting to this idea of being able to track what they see, but then apply that to their network to see if they're then actually seeing compromise in the real network as opposed to the deception network?
Lots of great nuggets of things there. So first, if you go back to trying to understand the attack, a lot of the information is typically lost as a defender who goes, hey, let me just shut this thing down because it's on my production network. I don't want it to spread and cause more problems. But in a deception environment, you can study it. So you can pick up the IOCs, you can pick up the full TTPs of the attack, and then you can have topographical maps that'll show you how the attack progressed. And so some of this information as a defender, I could get to that in a matter of hours, but it's nice to be able to have it all in one place and be able to see all that activity correlated together. And then I can respond very quickly. So something that may have taken me hours now can be down into minutes. And I'm capturing information that is typically lost. So maybe it's endpoint memory forensics, maybe it's the way that the attacker is attacking, or maybe it goes into the realm of decoy docs. If I look at a lot of the places that deception gets placed today, it's around protecting IP, research files, case files. And so if I plant things inside the network that look like a target an attacker would want, the minute that they take that file, and whether they open it inside the company or open it outside the technology, it's going to beacon back to the deception environment and say, hey, look, this is what somebody was after and this is what they stole. Again, rich information that you really don't get from any other security mechanism, and done in a non-disruptive way. Doesn't hurt or interfere with anything, but the minute it is engaged with, you're going to know, hey, that person was just after our new cancer research or our new autonomous vehicle design technology. And really then going, okay, well, now let me try to backtrack it and go, how did they get into the network? How were they attacking? How were they moving throughout the network? In addition to having all of that, we always say, well, how well do you play amongst others? And the big thing with the deception platform today is that it integrates with all the other tools. So you talked about wanting to be able to see if it's in other places in the network. And so if I can take all of that attack information that I've now gathered, feed it automatically into my SIM, be able to go do additional threat hunting or into my firewalls or endpoint systems to block and isolate these systems, I've now been able to fortify my defenses and be able to threat hunt for it. When they do try to return, and if I listen to the Mandiant stat that they return over half the time, then they are coming back. So now I can look for it, see where else in the network it is, and prevent them from successfully coming back in the same way.
I like that the idea of integration, because it suggests that you can build patterns from this, patterns that are repeatable. Because it's not just about what am I seeing in my live environment today, it's, well, was that there a week ago? a month ago, a year ago, 2 years ago. We're seeing an increasing number of long game attacks that are going on in the market. How easy is it to engage other vendors in this space to work with you on building playbooks that can then be applied over historical data?
It's something that Attivo Networks does. It's not common to all deception platforms, but for Attivo, there's over 30 native integrations. And so basically through APIs, we're going to integrate and share the data with them. So everything happens in an automated fashion. And that can be fully automated that says, hey, look, this is a ransomware attack. I have a playbook that is built into the platform that says, I recognize this pattern and behavior. So I'm going to automatically isolate the system off and give the defender time to respond and react to that before it can spread through the system. There are also integration into typical SOC tools. There is different orchestration integrations. So if you've got different orchestration platforms, you can feed in that way as well. There's a lot of work that's been done to make sure that it serves as a force multiplier to the other systems that are already out there.
Are you seeing increased interest from people running MSSPs? Because this seems to be the type of technology that they can see from one customer but apply to many, whereas a lot of the things that they look at because of privacy and other controls, they can't really take that and apply that because of customer security requirements.
We have definitely seen an increase in managed service provider interest in services that have been rolled out around the globe, both from large service providers as well as some of the smaller, more regional operators. What they look at is to say, look, I'm already offering a managed prevention service, so I'm already managing their firewalls, and people are starting to pay attention, going, no matter how big of a castle wall or deep moat you're going to build, that somebody is going to get in some way, if it's just even exploiting a mistake or maybe it's an insider. And so smaller organizations are coming forward and saying, I know I need something, but I don't have the skills and the resources to do it myself. And I also don't have the ability to handle a mountain of alerts. And so the managed service providers are definitely adopting this technology and rolling it out as services, specifically for the mid-market. And then the other thing, which is an interesting model, is the same technology that Attivo built for the managed service providers is actually working really well for these big multinational corporations that have many different businesses or organizations that may have centralized IT, but they need to run their own separate cost and management services. It proves to be an interesting way that says, hey, maybe if I'm at an automotive company and I operate around the globe, I'm seeing this maybe happening in Germany, but is it also happening here in the United States or in Europe or in China or other places? It's also creating an ability for them to be able to centralize and manage the activity and be able to see everything in aggregate. Again, some different ends of the spectrum of how the technology can be applied to help organizations of all sizes and industries.
You raise the insider there. It is that hidden threat we don't think about. And it doesn't have to be that malicious insider. It can be people making a mistake. And part of our problem today with security is it doesn't matter whether it's deliberate or mistake. We jump on people as hard as we can. That leads to people not reporting things. Oh, I accidentally clicked on that. If I tell anybody, then I'm going to get told off. So they don't say anything about it. How can you use this technology to, first of all, remove those barriers, B, spot the difference between somebody trying to work the system and an accidental click, and then C, use that to almost feedback into your security education?
And there's definitely different ways to approach it. On one hand, if there is a misconfiguration or an issue and that causes an exposure where something, for example, hits the deception environment, you're going to know about that misconfiguration right away. There's a lot of things the technology can do now for visibility and attack surface reduction. One of the things that an attacker wants is the credentials to get access into things. So if you have a way of understanding, well, maybe an administrator left their credentials out on different systems, and that all creates risk in a bigger attack surface. And so some of these tools that let them see those things, let them see the ads changes on the network, will all help to reduce that risk. And then you come to the other side, which is, okay, there's nefarious activity that's going on, and you want to be aware of that. It's interesting, one of the biggest debates that we've had with deception technology, and this is not in the efficacy because it's actually a top-rated tool for insider threats, but it's more of, do we tell the employees or do we not tell the employees? Mm-hmm. And on one hand, we actually had this at our advisory board that one organization said, we absolutely tell everybody. We have a zero tolerance policy. Legal's in, HR's in. There is absolutely no reason for anybody to be touching the deception environment. Any touch to it, they're walked out the door. The other side of it was, and this one was interesting, a financial institution said, I want to know what they're up to. I don't tell anybody anything because I want them to continue to be able to escalate their attack, and I want to be able to track them. I want to see if there's a ring. And we actually did find a ring in one case where 20 people were walked out. This was not actually a financial, this is actually a telecom provider. And 20 people were walked out for a ring. So there are different ways that you can use the technology, but the neat piece of it is that it kind of sits quietly unless somebody tries to engage with it, and then you know. Whether you're external or insider, you're doing something you shouldn't be. And even in the case of it being a policy violation, it exposes you to the risks presented there. One of my favorite stories on this too was actually a university teaching hospital, and they had a student that got into the research files of the teaching hospital, and obviously that's critical because that's how they get their grants and other things. This kid wasn't malicious. He was just curious. He's like, I thought this was really cool. I just wanted to research it. But what happened is he got into the decoy docs. It raised the alert that something was going on. They brought the kid in and they said, hey, look, what were you doing? And he said, I was just curious. I wasn't trying to hurt anything. And at that point, they had to make a decision. Do we kick the kid out of the university? Is there some other penalty or something or consequence for this kid? The reason why I love this story so much is they actually hired the kid onto the security team and said, okay, well, this is what you're going to do. You're going to help us find holes in the university network so that we can button them up, and after you do enough time with us, you'll have served and you'll move on, but don't do that stuff again. So it turned out to be just a neat story, but it's a great example of, whether ill-willed or not, the point is that that kid found security holes, and now they went in and they patched them, and they were able to make sure that a true malicious attacker would not have been able to get in and steal that information.
To tell or not to tell has always been a problem with IT. I can remember all the arguments in the 90s in CompUnix Wizards. We have a potential breach. Do we tell? And you'd have this news group with tens of thousands of people contributing around the world, almost split equally down the middle. Half say yes, half say no. And it's an argument I don't think we'll ever resolve. But it does open up a more serious problem for us. If we're going to not tell people, it does give us an opportunity to then see the curious people. And I like that story about the university. The problem is, for every story that's positive like that, there'll be 1,000 that are not quite so positive. How do we roll that forwards into a normal business environment where privacy and inevitably people will start shouting the rights of individuals to know? Because we're trying to protect something here, but we've also got to think about those employees on the ground.
It is a difficult thing because everybody is afraid of shame, ridicule, having their brand tarnished, but I look at this and go, with the cyber criminals that we have today, they have a marketplace. They can share information, share tools, things that they're not good at, they can buy. And there's a whole set of information sharing. And then we come over to the defender side, and between public and private sector, we don't communicate well on the things that we know. And even amongst industry, we don't communicate well. And I love the ISACs, the financial services, the healthcare ISACs for information sharing, that we have to stop feeling so guarded that this is a shaming event. If we can share information faster and more openly without the feeling of ridicule or humiliation, it's like, look, everybody at some point or another is going to have their network infiltrated. Does it turn into a breach or not? Maybe in some cases it does, and maybe in others it doesn't. But if you could take that information and share it with other like industries, help arm and say, look, this is what I saw, prepare and strengthen your defenses behind it, and we will do a better job. But I think we have a long way to go in openly sharing and communicating information, and we need to.
But that sharing goes much further than talking to our peers in the business and talking at a wider level to other industries. There's a forensic element here, and the one thing that we don't do well at all and have never done well in this business is capture the information so that law enforcement can take a prosecution. And there's a very good reason why. It's when that attack hits, we have one focus, and that's fix it, kick them out, reseal the doors. Unfortunately, we tend to do that with a 30-pound sledgehammer rather than a toffee hammer. How do we change that?
Some of it goes back to the tools that are being used. It's like you said, in everybody's haste to be able to shut down an attack and stop it, that we lose so much information. And so part of it is using technology where you can gather that information right at the onset of the attack and then make sure that that does get recorded and preserved in a way that it doesn't get tampered with. And deception technology is one of those enabling technologies to do that. Most other technologies are just designed to stop, shut it down, not study. And so I think the more we can get deception technology into the mix, we'll be able to capture that forensic and that attack data and information and then be able to use it not only within your own organization, but in other places. The other thing you start to get into is, well, how much then do I bring government in? And we work quite a bit here with the FBI in the United States, and we co-speak and present a lot on the topic that they're not out to hurt people. They want to get the bad guys as much as we do, but they're smart, and the internet is a very vague place. And so being able to track them down, we do need to work together and give as much information so that they can stop these big organizations from being successful. And then there's obviously big nation state and very specific attacks that maybe they're only going to be targeted at the organization, but there's still a lot of rich information that can be gathered from that, that could be shared to just understand. And as we get into more things like AI being used more by attackers, quantum computing coming in a few years, I mean, we're going to need to change our way on multiple fronts related to security, or it's going to get a lot worse.
If we look at the use of deception technology to create our dummy systems to find out what's going on, when somebody then experiences a real attack, do they freeze the deception environment? Because, of course, that's going to have the data that can be used for the forensics. Or do you find that customers react to both environments in the same way of, oh, I've got to shut that down because maybe, just maybe, we missed a connection between the deception and the real system, and therefore we've got to clear it all up?
Typically, because deception works so early in the attack cycle, and if you look at a lot of the other tools, they really activate after the attack has been executed. And here, we're catching them during their reconnaissance, their credential theft, their other acts of observation. And so it's different in the sense that people don't necessarily feel as pressurized to have to shut it down. They want to gather the information because they know then when they do go hunting for it in other places, they have the information that they need. I think it's a little bit different. Now, if there was actually an active attack underway, we always record that information inside of the deception environment. And so that's never removed unless the company decides to delete it at some point in time, but it's there. So even when they are reacting and responding, it's interesting too that because we integrate with a lot of the SOC tools as well, you may see the SOC start to kick it into their normal response plan and activity. But we've asked the question, you have both. You have our information that feeds into the SOC, but you also have our whole UI, and we've got drill down dashboards and timeline of events and activities. Where do you go? And it's interesting the number of companies that still go back into the deception environment because of the detail that's in there, that, like you said, inside their SOC tools, it doesn't carry that amount of detail for them to go into because this is a unique environment. So it wasn't really designed to capture all of these things. I do think those things work really well together to be able to go into the detail of the deception piece, go, okay, now maybe I validated and I may go back into my regular SOC tools to do my response, which is fine. But now you're doing it much more intelligently with the information. Even when you shut it down in a different place in the network, you can still let it continue to run inside the deception environment. And there's even some cool things like you can open a port to communicate with command and control and pick up other polymorphic and other activity. A lot of people do like to leave that open and study it. After a while, they're going to start to figure out that it's maybe not behaving exactly as they think it should, but it's usually late enough that you've gathered more information, much more information than if you had just simply said, okay, I'm blocking it at this point, and it's done.
How do we raise the profile of deception technology? I've been around this industry a long time. If I was to try and focus on every single technology that comes along that's going to solve the problems, I never actually solve a problem. I'm forever chasing technologies. People are overwhelmed by the amount of tools that are out there, and they therefore don't use any of them very effectively. If this is going to be that early warning system that we need to have, what is it that people need to change in terms of their mindset, and how do you drive the market forward?
The first thing is it's surprising me how many people we still have conversations with that believe that they can build a stronger perimeter defense. And let's be real, the perimeter is essentially gone. Your perimeter is your computer and anything outside of it. So the first step is admitting you need to have some form of detection inside the network. And then you really need to take a look at the environments you're trying to protect and go, okay, the traditional measures that I may have known about, are they going to work? So it's not all known attack. Your IDS system may have had its function for known attacks, but what about all these unknown attacks? What do you do when you go into the cloud and you need something that will operate in high velocity, high data environments? And deception's a neat technology for being able to do that because it can not only handle the volume, but it's designed for that environment and can create deceptions for things like serverless functions and containers and other things that, again, there's just not great detection mechanisms for those environments. Or you get into the world of IoT where you go, okay, those systems were fundamentally not even designed to be connected to the internet in any way, and so there's no way to patch them, there's no log management. You start to look at your whole security framework and start to just appreciate that what you did before is probably not going to work on the different attack surfaces today, and then look for opportunities and then test it and see, did it do what you thought it was supposed to do? And that's where we've seen people move into both upstream and downstream operations with deception technology, because it is super accurate and efficient. Except prevention alone is not enough. Detection is something that you need in every network, both small and large, and then really take a look at the different environments that you're operating in and be realistic about your choice in detection. How well does it cover all of these attack surfaces? And I guess the plug for deception is there just by its fundamental design, because it's not in line, it's not an agent, it's not a disruptive technology, it fits well across all of these different environments.
I think anything that gives the defender a bit more of a chance has to be welcomed.
The biggest challenge is, A, it's not a honeypot. It's got some fundamentals of deception technology, but that'd be like calling a horse and buggy like a modern-day Tesla. It is a very different technology, and not that honeypots were ever bad, but the biggest challenge with them is they were fundamentally difficult to manage. You needed highly skilled workers. Now you don't need that. Everything is machine learning, automated, and designed in a way. It's kind of like your smartphone. There's a lot of intelligence in it, but it's very simple to operate, and that's where deception has come today. Again, it's got all this feature functionality and capabilities it didn't have before, and it's easy to use, and it works across all these attack surfaces. So sometimes we kind of scratch our heads and go, why wouldn't people want to be interested or give this technology a try? And some of it is skepticism. It's deception. Does it really work? Attackers are pretty smart. Does it work? And what we can tell you is yeah, it really does work.
I think because we've all been taught that deception is a bad thing, not a good thing. Carolyn, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.